Okay, well, listen, everybody, welcome to the February call. My name is Mark Reynolds. I'll be hosting today's call. Today, you can register for the June conference, June 7th through 9th in DC. If you go to our homepage and click on Take Action, you can scroll down to International Conference and you can actually register for the June conference. So that is officially open, and everybody who wants to come is certainly welcome. This Monday, 86 CCLers signed in for our first ever conservative lobby day. So this was a lobby day that was just for people who are right of center and only going to see right of center offices. We know so far that we had about 74 meetings, and some of the people, this was brand new. This was their first time ever being on Capitol Hill. And for those of you who've done that for the first time, you know how exhilarating that can be. But also for a lot of our longtime CCLers, who'd been coming where every time they were in lobby meeting, they were dramatically in the minority. To be in lobby meetings where it was all conservatives with conservatives, it was a kind of game-changing moment for them, not only of their experience of being on the Hill, but what they felt like they could do. So for everybody who worked on that, that was a big deal. It was something new that we were trying, and we're very excited about how things went. I think you can draw a line back to 2014. Our guest speaker, Bob Inglis, who's on our governing board, on our advisory board, one of the most important friends and allies we have, was the keynote speaker at our 2014 conference. Now, I want to go just a little bit further back in time before I talk about what Bob said at the 2014 conference. In 1971, a book was published called Watership Down. The characters in Watership Down were rabbits. And I thought it was just a blast, a really fun read, but they were rabbits, so there were certain challenges they had. So for instance, in the rabbits' counting system, their counting system went one, two, three, many. That's how they counted. One, two, three, everything after three was many. In the 2014 conference, Bob Inglis asked everybody who was in conservative to stand up in the room. And many people stood up, which was, in fact, five. So that was a really important moment for us because we had advertised ourselves as a bipartisan organization. But it became very obvious in that moment that we were going to have to get serious about recruitment to actually bring in conservatives. And so that was a game changer for us because now we have thousands of conservatives in the organization and we're able to have a conservative-only lobby day. And I think a lot of that was Bob pointing out the actual facts to us in the 2014 conference. So we got double duty from Bob today. He just finished giving the keynote conference to 300 people in Houston to our Third Coast Conference. Welcome, Bob Inglis. It's been 4 years since you've been on this call. And tell us a little bit about what you shared with our people in Houston this morning.
Oh, good to be with you, Mark, and everyone. First, I was telling Ricky here that I remember the last time I was on the call, actually, I was out cutting grass and I had forgotten about the call. And so you had these terrible nervous moments, I think, where I was, you and Marshall were, I think, ad-libbing for a while. And so I can't help but mention our friend Marshall and how we miss him, but his DNA is reflected surely here today in Houston. Mark, what I said to this crowd today was, I asked for a similar show of hands. And the thing that's interesting is that when the conservatives raised their hands, the other people in the audience spontaneously applauded. And I told them what I tell everybody about CCL is CCL is remarkably different than typical organizations in the climate space because of the awareness of the need to welcome conservatives into this effort. And I just saw it just today in Houston. I mean, really, is spontaneous applause when I asked conservatives to raise their hands. And so surely Marshall set the DNA of CCL right because of what happened here today in Houston, that welcome. That's the thing that's so important. It's just that, you know, in a way, I'm maybe the representative of that kind of person. You know, for 6 years, I was in Congress saying that climate change was nonsense. All I knew was Al Gore was for it. That was the end of the inquiry. And so it's pretty ignorant, I admit that, but that's the way it was for 6 years. Then I was out 6 years, came back for another six, you know, and as you know the story, my son said to me, Dad, I'll vote for you when I was running that race, but you're going to clean up your act in the environment, he told me. Step one of a three-step metamorphosis. Second was going to Antarctica, seeing the evidence in the ice core drillings. Third step was another science committee trip and something of a spiritual awakening with being inspired by the faith of an Aussie climate scientist who was out to love God and love people. That inspired me. And so, so I'm sort of that person that was wrong about climate. I was really wrong because I was in Congress for 6 years and I was wrong. It's one thing to be, you know, member of the general public and be wrong. It's quite another to be carrying around the voting card in your pocket and be wrong. And so to be welcomed by people who knew it was real back then and to have that grace extended to me makes me particularly aware of my ingrafting into this community of people who've been right on this a lot longer than I've been right on this. And so we need to welcome people who come around. And that's what I was saying here at CCL Houston today, the regional conference, is welcome these folks. And the people in attendance had already done it. So I was just preaching to the converted, I think, about that welcome.
Wow. Okay. So beautifully said. Thank you so much for that, Bob. And one of the things you've always argued is that a carbon tax or carbon fee actually reflects conservative values. And could you just elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah. You know, I quite often show a clip of Milton Friedman on the Phil Donahue show. Conservatives know to sort of bow at the mention of Dr. Friedman's name. You know, he's a father of modern conservatism. Reagan's one of Reagan's economics advisors, professor at the University of Chicago, Chicago School of Economics, very much into free markets. So he's on the Phil Donahue show in the 1980s. And Phil, for those of you too young to remember, well, Phil Donahue was basically a white guy doing an Oprah show. that's who he was. He's from Chicago, same deal, talk show. And so Friedman used to go on and debate with Phil. And so Phil said, well, what do you do about pollution then, Dr. Friedman, if you don't want to regulate it? Friedman says, you tax it. You tax pollution. And so we just at republicen.org believe that is bedrock conservatism, that you want to internalize the negative externalities associated with the burning of fossil fuels. I once said that to the Greenville News, the largest newspaper in the district that I used to represent. The guy stopped me. He said, what'd you say? And I said, I repeated it. He said, I can't write that in this paper, man. We write at the seventh grade level. So I said, reveal the hidden cost. Next day it said in the paper, Engler said we need to reveal the hidden costs associated with the burning of fossil fuels, which is what it is, right? I mean, people, it takes a little explanation, but the thing that CCL is about, the thing that we're about at republicen.org, the answer to this problem is internalizing the negative externalities associated with the burning of fossil fuels. And what that means is you just bring all the cost in so that the market can see those costs. And once it sees it, then we'll have, if we do this right, through the border adjustment, which is so important to CCL's approach and our approach, is that will make it so 7 billion people around the world see the true cost of the burning of fossil fuels, and they'll move away from that cost. That's rock solid Milton Friedman economics. Now, the good news is that there's so many progressives who agree with that. In fact, I once asked a senior economist, that means an old guy, at Virginia Tech. I said, give me the name of an economist that I should read that would disagree with that. And he said, he thought for a while and he said, Can't think of one. He said, in fact, you can't be an economist if you disagree with what you just said. He said, it'd be like being a scientist and not believing in the scientific method. He said, it doesn't exist. You can't be an economist if you disagree with that. So isn't it amazing? We've got a solution that economists, whether they're Paul Krugman or Art Laffer on the right, would agree that this is the solution. We just need to make it more politically acceptable.
Great. So we've always believed that any climate solution has to be bipartisan to be durable. You know, otherwise you're at the whim of the next administration. And so, you know, obviously we are very, very interested in what will resonate with conservative members of Congress. So what are the messages that you think we should stick with and not stay away from, and particularly in meeting with conservative members of the House and Senate?
Yeah, great question. I was just discussing this at the CCL Houston Regional Conference here. Is it, you know, what we're going to hear from Republicans for a while, I believe, is what we're already hearing. They're going to stick on these notes, which are innovation, not regulation. And that's good. It's just that it's like this. We can't let them stop there. And it's like this. We are trying to climb an enormous climate action mountain. And the folks on the phone today are willing to set out on that trek. And bless you for being willing to set out on that trek. It is a big, long, and arduous trek. So there's a base camp up on a plateau. It's called innovation. And it's done by various tax expenditures. You know, you can, give credits, exemptions, or deductions, you're basically reducing somebody's taxes, and it's a tax incentive. It's also a tax expenditure if you're the federal government, because it means that money isn't coming in because you're leaving it in the pocket of the taxpayer, right? And so it's called a tax expenditure. So there's this tax expenditure plateau on this mountain. And the key is we can't let my party turn that into a permanent encampment. It's okay to make it a base camp, but a base camp only, and keep climbing this mountain. Figure out how to get the world in on this thing, get it accurately priced, and then have the free enterprise system sort this out. So our great risk, I think, Mark, is that we get to a place where they want a permanent encampment. And so what I'd suggest to people as they meet with Republicans is when you hear the line, when you're given the line, innovation, not regulation, just say yes, yes. And how do we get that innovation? Mm-hmm. And then just wait for the answer. Because if the answer is, well, we're going to incentivize these things, wait patiently, is again the DNA that Marshall said of CCL is so beautiful, that you wait, you listen, you care for what the other person is saying. Then you can say after that, and will the economics work in China and India, and as well as they work here in rich America? And what that Republican has to say, that conservative has to say, is, well, not until you fix the economics. Because, you know, we can incentivize technology here and it'll work in America because we are so rich. But you take that same technology and try to apply it in a poorer place, which is having emissions, doesn't necessarily work unless you price in the negative effects of burning fossil fuels through the border adjustment. Then, so my point is that you can be there in confidence, knowing that asking the question, yes, Congresswoman, or yes, Congressman, how do you get that innovation, is you've got the answer, and you're ready to help them see that.
So Speaker McCarthy said that Republicans do need to start promoting solutions in Congress. Do you see an impact with the, you know, Republicans in Congress from, you know, leadership saying we need to start moving on this?
Yeah, I think that, you know, things are changing. You know, short history of this, early 08, Newt Gingrich is on the couch with Nancy Pelosi.
Yeah.
We don't agree on much, do we, Newt? No, Nancy, but we agree climate change is real. Let's do something about it. By the end of 08, Newt had switched. We don't know, he said. And so did my friend John Boehner. So did most of the Republican leadership, sadly. That's when I just kept saying, no, it's real. It's still real. But bad timing for me, because the Great Recession was on, and a secret Muslim non-American socialist had been elected to the White House. Actually, he's none of those things, but that's what we decided to declare him to be. And so so that's where we entered the decade of disastrous disputation, as we call it at republician.org. And it literally was a decade, but it's over. It ended in November of 18 when Republicans lost the House, and it has dawned on Kevin McCarthy and others that you can't win the majority back without winning suburban districts, and you can't win suburban districts with a retro position on climate. And so that's now the full reality for the Republican leadership in the House and some senators in the Senate. I wouldn't say the leadership in the Senate, but some senators in the Senate. And of course, we've still got a block at the White House, but things are changing. And that's, so I think the change is real, in answer to your question, Mark.
Okay, Bob. So I'm gonna ask Brett to monitor the questions that are coming in on the chat, and just to ask him to pull out anything that he thinks we should ask from the chat. Let me just ask you one thing though before that. So, you know, we're in February of an election season. What's it like for a member of Congress? You know, you don't know if you're going to be primaried or not yet. You know, you don't, because like most people aren't worried about the general election, right? They're the way the districts are written, most people are going to be safe if they can get to the general election. But what's it like working in a world where you don't know if you're going to get challenged, and what extra tensions does that bring to a congressional office?
Yeah, it's a high tension time, you know, between waiting for that wonderful passing of the filing deadline and seeing who you got, and hoping you got nobody, especially hoping that you don't have a primary opponent.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's the thing is, you know, it's one thing to lose in a general election, but at least you got a party to go home to, and they will say, oh, well, you gave it the good fight, you know, or if you lose in a primary, there's no home to go home to. I mean, you've been kicked out of the house. And so it's pretty painful experience, you know, to lose in a primary. Losing in general is bad, but it's not as bad as losing a primary. So, yeah, I think it's really quite a moment when you're waiting to see if you're going to be challenged on the right. And particularly now, you know, in my case, I was challenged by a Tea Party. They were successful in that challenge, as you know, but in 2010. But now it's the Trump type candidate who will challenge you. And that's a pretty scary situation. So in answer to your question, it's scary. Of course, filing deadlines are passing. So, for example, I'm in Texas right now. The filing deadline has passed here. And that is a sigh of relief if you're an incumbent, because you realize now what you got. You got a general election opponent. And as you just said, Mark, most of the districts are drawn in such a way as you're not going to lose that general election. It's all about the primary. So, but as the primary, as those filing deadlines pass, you have people breathing a little bit more and having a little bit more freedom to push away a little bit, especially though if they've cleared the primary and they're in a somewhat competitive district where they could possibly be beaten by a Democrat, let's say, if they're a Republican, then this really becomes a case that climate activists can make is one place where you might want to safely push away from President Trump is climate action. In other words, say, if you got to say that as a Republican, I support Donald Trump. But on the other hand, I do disagree with him about climate. I would submit it's a safe way for that Republican to deviate from the party line.
Great, thank you. Brett, are there things in the chat that that we should ask Bob?
Oh, there's certainly a lot, and we look forward to your wisdom here on all of this, Bob. I think one of the main trends is a question really orienting around, for those members of Congress that have already co-sponsored the Energy Innovation Act, what are some strategic ways that you might suggest that they work towards reaching out to get more co-sponsors, especially from across the aisle?
Yeah, it can help a lot. You know, we think that members of Congress don't relate to one another because they seem to be in constant battle. Actually, they do have relationships, and so even across the aisle. So it's worth encouraging them to reach out. And so to do the each one, bring one kind of concept, you know. I think that for a Democrat reaching out to a Republican, there's surely power in that for that Democrat. There's every reason that they'd want to do that because it would show them to be a solution agent in their district. For the Republican reaching out, it shows them to be the future of the party. It is true that they're rarely leaders in Congress. Most members of Congress choose to follow rather than to lead. But we just got to find some leaders that are willing to say, this is the future of this party, and I'm ready to declare that future.
Excellent. And what would you recommend are effective ways to bring in some of our community grass tops business leaders at the local level to help impact both these meetings and local voters?
It's a good instinct to go find those people who are opinion makers in the business community, because once I keep on referencing Republican members of Congress, because that's of course who I'm naturally focused on and what we've got, we think we've got to go find, but those Republican members are going to respond positively to that business voice. And so if you can present that voice from people who they would trust, you know, that they'd say, they're not out to attack the capitalistic system. They're out to work within that system. That feels familiar and okay to a Republican. If you're just attacking the capitalistic system, then that's really hard for a Republican to figure out how they're going to fit their messaging in there. And of course, it's Alex Bosmoski of our team is always quick to point out to me, you know, if you're on the left, you have a convenient villain in corporations. You can say corporation like it's a cuss word, a little bit like Reagan used to say government like it was a cuss word. And so you can womp up a crowd of corporations, and it works on the left. But on the right, people are saying corporations are people too, actually, a Supreme Court decision. But anyway, so you know, it doesn't raise our hackles when you use a cuss word corporation. And so so we got to make it so that it's like fits with the language, which is, yeah, we like corporations. They're innovators. They make products for us, and they hire us, and they give us jobs. And, there's of course a split in the climate community. There are people that want to attack the capitalistic system. They think that's the way to do it. Maybe it works for some of them, but it's not going to work for anybody that we're trying to reach among conservative Republicans.
Yeah. Brett, we've got time for one more. Which one do you want to pick?
Yeah, there's a couple I think that can be grouped together here, which is really just on overall conservative messaging and focusing not only on revealing the cost in terms of the fee side of things, Bob, what recommendations would you have in saying things to explain the dividend, especially with a conservative framing, that dividend component?
You know, I this is really helpful to the question, because I was speaking at the downtown Houston Pachyderm Club on Thursday, and a guy said to me, so you're a socialist and you want to redistribute income. And I was like, what? So I said, in what way is a per capita return a socialist redistribution method? Well, I guess you can make some sort of case for that by saying that, well, if you pay large taxes and it goes out per capita, maybe it is redistribution. But on the other hand, I think that you just have to ask them, how do you feel about, for example, South Carolina, and I should say a shout out to Charlotte and Constantine, if they're on the line from Greenville, South Carolina. I think the Greenville chapter is listening. If you're in South Carolina, you got like a $50 tax return that the state legislature, of course, controlled by Republicans, sent out to everybody because we had too much tax revenue. Okay. And if you're in Alaska and you like the Alaska Permanent Fund check that you get, does that feel like socialism or redistribution? I don't think so. So that's the thing that I think is that we know that as people that are really concerned about climate, is the real strong justification for using a dividend is it establishes a constituency for a steadily rising carbon tax. And I love the way that CCL says that. I mean, steadily rising, because it has to be steadily rising in order for this to work. And so it creates a constituency for action. I'd go light on that in talking to rock rib conservatives, because they get nervous about the steadily rising until they come to understand the substitution effect. That is something that we got schooled on from Art Laffer, another one of Reagan's advisors at Vanderbilt one time. And it's on our website that has him explaining why you've got to have a steadily rising carbon tax. And when that comes from Art Laffer, it sort of helps. So it's a long rambling answer there, but it's basically the idea is just help them to see that you're turning the money back to the people. There's no growth of government. And just really emphasize that point. And that's, I think, the beauty of the proposal.
Bob, thank you so much again. It's like every touch this organization has with you, we feel so much better, not just for the information, but I do think you're one of those people that approaches things the way Marshall did. And I do remember 2014, when you started that talk, you said that there were three reasons that we would succeed. The first was the DNA that we started with. And you're one of those incredible souls that I just feel like, we're so lucky to have somebody who not just has the background, the experience, but certainly approaches things the way we hope to.
Well, likewise, all the things I say about Marshall, I think, Mark, are reflected in you. And so, it's like this, a great big CCL hug. I'll give you a big hug. So.
Okay, good. Right back at you, Bob. So I know you have to catch a plane. If you want to stick around for the next 10 or 15 minutes, fine. But if you have to go to the airport, that's certainly understandable. And thank you again for doing the talk at our Houston conference also today. I got a lot of texts of people who just loved being there today.
Well, great. Good to see everybody. Thanks so much. Keep up the good work.
Thank you, Bob. Yep. Okay. Woof. Okay. So I wanted to go over a few things that happened since last month's call, and I want to just start with a reflection on last year. We ended last year with 568 chapters. 466 of those are in the U.S., which means there's now over 100 chapters around the world. And Europe and Africa are just growing like crazy. So since last month, Brussels, Belgium opened up, Quadra Dagon, Burkina Faso opened up, Copenhagen, Denmark, and Madrid, Spain. So enormous amount of growth there. We finished the year with 181,421 supporters, and over 70,000 of those were new last year. So for those of you who did outreach events, tabling events, of which there were 4,679 outreach events conducted by you last year, I think that is the driving force behind 70,000 new members. We had 30 editorial board meetings, 3,354 letters to the editor, 20 editorials, 578 op-eds, 63 televisions. That's a just off the charts explosion off television of anything that ever happened before, and 181 radio interviews. Again, that is just a huge spike up. So congratulations to everybody that's been reaching out that way. In terms of personal letters to members of Congress, 97,995. So thank you all, and for asking and inviting other people to write letters to members of Congress. It's almost 100,000 letters. And we're within an eyelash of 1,000 endorsements. So congratulations to everybody on the work on that. I imagine that many of you saw that the Senate Climate Solutions Caucus expanded last week. That included Senator Rubio, Republican of Florida, Senator Stabenow, Democrat of Michigan, Senator Collins, Republican of Maine, and Senator Baldwin, Democrat of Wisconsin. So congratulations to everybody on that. We're very excited about their work. And I think you can draw a direct line to the, you know, 8 carbon pricing bills in the House, that had a lot to do with the Climate Solutions Caucus in the House creating an avenue for people to work with each other. In no way should we expect that the Climate Solutions Caucus in the Senate is about carbon pricing. It is about getting Republicans and Democrats talking to each other, working across the aisle. And that's what we should celebrate and not push them too hard on carbon pricing. Now, I know one of the things that we've tried to do, and it's delicate this time of year, is as an organization, is to stay out of the electoral process. I certainly know a lot of you as citizens are going to candidate forums, that you're, you know, reaching out, you're walking precincts, you're making phone calls. But as CCL, we've always said we're going to work with who's elected. And it's a very, very tricky thing, not putting people on the spot in public campaign events. Certainly, we don't want to have so many Democrats speaking out in favor of carbon pricing that becomes during the election season that it's only a Democratic issue. But I thought that what the San Mateo chapter did was really interesting, because this wasn't for a federal election, but they did host a candidate forum for a state election in California. And their goal was to partner with other organizations close to them, and then to give CCL a lot of exposure. So what they ended up with was 4 partnering organizations, and then four co-sponsoring organizations, and then 17 partnering organizations. So they developed this broad coalition of groups that were working to put on an event. They sold 525 tickets for an event that holds 492 people and actually sold the event out. So their goal of making CCL aware in their community, and then also partnering with other organizations, I believe was really achieved. And congratulations to everybody in San Mateo who worked on that. I want to go to all the other way at the other end of the spectrum of some of the places our work happens. One of the things that came out this month is that Arlington, Texas had a proclamation about in favor of energy innovation. And so, you know, usually we get endorsements, but this was actually a proclamation. And so it was being sent out on social media, and Ashley Hunt Martirano, who manages Facebook and Instagram, was getting it out. And she sent it to some of the staff saying, look at this great thing, a proclamation in Arlington, Texas. And I love the note that Ricky Bradley, who hosts this call with me and manages RIT, sent back to Ashley. He said, thanks for noticing this work, Ashley. There's actually quite a story of determination, stick-to-itiveness, and constancy behind the proclamation. I think it's an opportunity for CCL to highlight the inputs required in conservative areas of the country to achieve what they see as a small but disappointing output. The context of the Third Coast and other southern states is that sharing in the successes happening everywhere else in the country is a mixed blessing. I've seen how hard these folks work just to have a good relationship with their member of Congress, who they know has less than zero chance of becoming a co-sponsor. And the fact that Paula Luna and Sean Reeder are still in CCL after all these years of rejection and nothingness is a blessing. I'd love if we could somehow promote their story and highlight the work it takes in places like Arlington, Texas. So I think it's important to see both sides of our organization, the places like where I am in California, where there's a lot of momentum, there's a lot of work for it. And then there's some places where it's just playing hard and they hang in there. So, you know, the fact that we've got 300 people in Houston for the Third Coast Conference, I think is remarkable of the people in that part of the country who are working their butt off when they don't see, you know, one of the 75 co-sponsors coming from their district, perhaps. Okay. So Bob mentioned Marshall several times. They were very good friends. And for those of you, maybe you're new to the organization, know that our founder passed away in December. And then in January, there was a service for him a couple weeks ago. The church just had new technology where they could live stream. So we were trying to figure out how to do it, but the church actually bought new technology and they could live stream it. And so during Marshall's service, there were over 600 people watching, and a lot more people have watched the download since then, which you can get on community. But they were also able to capture how many other countries people were listening in from. And so here's the countries that we're aware of were listening to the live stream: France, Canada, Costa Rica, Mexico, Russia, United Kingdom, South Korea, Japan, Italy, Iceland, Malaysia, Ukraine, Finland, Germany, and Brazil. I think it's a really testament to the work that Marshall's done with his life over time, and also to all of you of pushing our organization way out into the world. Okay, so what are we doing this month? Well, in Canada, we have an international conference coming up in May, so we're starting to do the beginning work to get ready for that. We're also focusing on getting as many letters to the editor as possible. And then also, this is going to be for both U.S. and Canada. The 50th anniversary of Earth Day is coming up this April. And I think this is going to be one of the biggest outreach opportunities for us ever. So we're asking both Canada and U.S. to start to make your plans to how do we maximize this April with the 50th anniversary of Earth Day. Second thing in the U.S. is enroll everyone in your chapter in the monthly calling campaign. We've been developing a new program over the last couple of years of dividing it up in the chapter of who's going to regularly call their member of Congress. And we're happy about where the program is, and there's backup material in the action sheet about how you could go about doing that. And then the bonus action is to participate in the snowman protest. You know, we're glad that other people protest, but that we don't as an organization, but we want our snowmen protesting. So they've actually created a contest, and you don't have to be in an area where there's snow. You can make snowmen out of sticks, and there's actually a prize this time. So we invite you to join the snowman protest. And then the communication exercise I love is titled, I Heard You Say Reflection. It very much has to do with reflecting back to people what they said so that we actually, people know that we're heard. You know, we don't want to get in the business of just asking questions to, like, that's something to check off. We want to make sure that people always sense that they're connecting with us when they share. So I just want to show you the message people are going to get when they go to register for the conference. So as you can see, Brett clicked on Take Action, clicked on International Conference. And then if you scroll down a little bit of this page, what you'll see is right there, Heal Our Democracy, Solve Climate Change. 2020 will be a challenging year for the climate. We've been grappling with some big, complicated challenges as a country. Later this year, we'll have a presidential election. Meanwhile, urgent problems like climate change are higher in the public awareness than ever. But sometimes it feels like polarization is higher than ever too. How will our government take action? You have a choice. Will you choose to resign yourself to politics as usual, to engage in unproductive fights? Or will you choose to work together, to connect with your fellow Americans, to organize in your community and to bring people together around the urgent issue of climate change. At CCL, we've made our choice. We're showing up in Washington, D.C. to help heal our democracy and our climate. So I love what the team put together as a kind of welcome message to this year's conference. Thank you all for what you're doing. Our speaker next month is from a group called NOCHI. What they do is they train people at museums and zoos how to weave climate change into their communications. So we're looking forward to that. It's very much of a values-based training also. So thanks all. We'll look forward to seeing all of you in June. For those of you who can make it, that is open now. You can click on the website and go ahead and register starting today. Thanks, everybody. And Brett, can you unmute everybody so everybody who wants to can wave goodbye?
Thank you for listening to this episode of Citizens Climate Lobby's training program. You can tune into more episodes anywhere podcasts are available. Inspired by what you heard today? Join Citizens Climate Lobby to advocate for bipartisan climate solutions. Go to community.citizensclimate.org to find more trainings, resources, your local chapter, national action teams, discussion forums, and more. Be sure to like our Facebook page and follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Citizens Climate. We also invite all of our listeners to subscribe to our YouTube channel for more inspiration. And together, we are creating the political will for a livable world.